Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
All right, welcome, welcome, welcome. It's hour two, Toker Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, toll-free at 844-420-RADIO. That's 844-207-2346. We just got finished speaking with Mason Tevert of the Marijuana Policy Project. Big thanks to Mason for joining us on the show, who confirmed that Marijuana Policy Project supports the Responsible Ohio Yes on Issue 3 campaign, or at least the initiative. I shouldn't say the campaign. They support the initiative, as does National Normal, which just voted in its board of directors meeting here Saturday in Portland to endorse, with reservations, the Responsible Ohio Amendment. And Drug Policy Alliance's Ethan Nadelman, in previous remarks, February in San Francisco, seemed to be endorsing the initiative. And it's a situation where all of the leaders and the top people in the major national drug reform organizations are facing kind of a crossroads. Ethan said it in his speech at the International Cannabis Business Conference in San Francisco, where he said, "Are we reaching the end of the time where marijuana activists really have any say in how marijuana gets legalized?" You got to remember that from 1972 to 2014, every attempt to reform marijuana laws in this country has pretty much come from the hand of three billionaires. You know, I shouldn't date it back to 72. I don't know who did the original Prop 19 in California back then, but at least in my recollection, the past 10 years that I've been involved in marijuana reform. And in fact, you know, we can go back to 96. Let's go back to 96 with Prop 215 in California. Dating back to the medical marijuana era, every attempt at marijuana law reform has come due to the philanthropic largesse of three billionaires. Peter Lewis of Progressive Insurance, George Soros of the Open Society Institute, and John Sperling. And where's Sperling from? Where'd he get his money from? I always forget. But John Sperling's the other one. And a little bit of George Zimmer from Men's Warehouse, okay? But it's mostly these billionaires that are funding the initiatives to legalize marijuana. And it was done for philanthropic purposes, right? We're going to pass medical marijuana to get the sick and dying off the battlefield, right? We're going to pass recreational marijuana to end the racial disparity and the arrests of people. There was always an altruistic mean for doing it, right? There's always a reason. Now, supporting reasons included that, hey, yeah, we're going to create businesses, we'll create jobs, we'll raise tax revenue for schools. Yeah, those were the supporting reasons. But the reason marijuana had to be legalized was to end an injustice. Are we at the end of that point in marijuana reform now? Are we to the point now where this is about business and money? And what they want? And how much can we influence that at this point? I already know to some extent many marijuana reformers who'd been working in the nonprofit world who are now part of consulting firms, who have opened their own consulting firms, some who've become licensed growers in the recreational markets. So a lot of them are already shedding their nonprofit roots and you know, making sure they're able to cash in on the green rush. As more and more of that happens, as marijuana becomes more and more legal, and your choice of careers and where you're going to focus your energy can be, say, something like normal, where you're going to get paid nonprofit salary, if that, or emerging green rush where you could have a startup that could make you millions. There's a talent and brain and experience drain that's going to occur, if it hasn't already occurred to some great extent here, in the marijuana reform community. So how much more influence are we ever going to have on marijuana reform? Those of us in it for the right reasons, right? In it for the civil liberties reasons and the medical reasons and the spiritual reasons. Is it really even going to matter what we think? As marijuana becomes more and more legal, it just becomes more and more a business interest. And Mason brought up another point about public use and whether or not we end up segregated into separate but equal accommodations. And I was really glad to hear him say that. He came just short of saying that would be a deal breaker, but you know, he sounds like he's got the right attitude toward this, which surprisingly was not an attitude shared by my friend.
The beginning of the end started in 1996 when California legalized weed for so-called medical purposes. 16 years later, Washington and Colorado legalized it outright and let people sell it from storefronts. And what has been the result?
The generation of millions of dollars in tax revenue for the states and creation of hundreds of new jobs in a growing multi-billion dollar industry?
No. Well, yes. But at what cost?
Let's see. The cost of all that police time and money that's now spent going after real criminals and prisons with enough room to hold them all?
No. Well, yes. But look at what it's done to the people.
You mean that fewer of them are dying of alcohol, tobacco, and prescription-related causes since they've switched to cannabis, and many more are receiving medical benefit from a cheap, non-toxic healing herb?
No. Well, yes. Yes. Yes to all of that. But I can smell pot from my backyard. And I can't tell my kids not to do it because it's illegal.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups.
Hi, I'm Alex Rogers, producer of the 4th Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, the OMMBC. There have been a lot of recent changes to Oregon cannabis laws. Recreational sales start October 1st, new licensing from the state, and changes to medical marijuana. Are you prepared? Join us at the downtown Portland Hilton September 12th and 13th with the industry's top cannabis experts, political leaders, exhibitors, and nightly networking events. For more information, join us online or give us a call. The OMMBC. Be part of history.
Cannabis culture goes way back, you dig? Way before hippies and beatniks and pigs. Back to hep cats like Louis Armstrong and Cab Calloway. Soulful dames like Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday. All the way to old Blue Eyes and the Rat Pack. So come spark up a jazz cigarette and take a trip back to when marijuana was jive, muggles, reefer, and tea. It's the new Viper Hour, Daddy-O, see? The early 20th century archives of blues, jazz, and swing that defined the cannabis culture and everything. Every Monday night at 8 p.m. and weekends at 1 a.m. Pacific on 420radio.org, the home for marijuana music. Yeah.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your cannabis 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPAs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
Oh,
Music from Phobos there. That's Elixir for Sunsets. Part of our Electric Tuesday library. We've got more of that coming up tonight, 8 p.m. Pacific time. Electric Bob's Boogaloo. 1 hour of nonstop house electronic music mix. Check that out. We'll give you a little preview coming up at 20 after in our Electric Tuesday Daily Toker Tune. So stay tuned. So as I was mentioning before the break, Mason Tvert and his colleague Brian Vicente, working independently, not a marijuana policy project, but working independently, put together this initiative for limited public use in the city of Denver. And you got to understand that working in Colorado, unlike the other three legalized marijuana states, in Colorado it's a constitutional amendment. So we're talking about people's constitutional right to be able to use marijuana. And the question being whether that constitutional right is even a right if you have no place to enjoy that right, right? Like, if you live in Colorado, you can smoke pot in your house, if you own your house. But landlords can prevent renters from smoking in their house. And Section 8 housing recipients, people with federal housing assistance, can't smoke in their house. And tourists who come to Colorado can't smoke in their hotel rooms. There's no public place they're allowed to go smoke. So is it a right if it's something that can only be enjoyed by homeowners? Well, I would argue it's not. It's not a right. It then becomes a privilege. So Mason and Brian put together this limited public use initiative that they gathered more than twice the signatures for, and that has forced the hand of the city of Denver and their political leaders to recognize that if they don't work with Mason and Brian, they could end up losing an initiative at the polls that would grant wide, very wide rights to public use in Denver. So perhaps they realized that working with Mason and Brian, they could craft a compromise that would be amenable to both sides. And my fear when I first heard this was, well, wait a minute, if you could win with the initiative, why would you give up ground and negotiate a compromise that will be worse than what your initiative would give you? Well, Mason's got a good point. Just because you pull one initiative doesn't mean you couldn't do another one later. And so I think the city of Denver has recognized that they can't go into this unless they're negotiating in good faith, because they'll lose at the ballot box. So it's in their best interest to work this out to some reasonable compromise. And so I wanted to know, and I asked Mason about this, and I wanted to know, you know, what is a reasonable compromise? What becomes a reasonable compromise when we're talking about whether or not we can smoke marijuana any place? Now, to me, the reasonable compromise is that if we got a place that's set up for me to smoke a cigar, that's a place I can smoke pot. That's where I'd start. That's where it should be. That's what I'd hope we'd win at the end of this. If a place is allowing tobacco smoking, it must allow cannabis smoking. That seems only fair to me. But there's a lot of people who make the argument that cannabis ought to be kept separate from alcohol. Now, part of that's a scientific argument in that your impairment under the influence of alcohol is greatly exacerbated if you add cannabis to the mix. People that drink are like a 13 times greater risk for crash on the roads, but you add pot to that, drinking and toking is like a 24 times risk. So I understand that argument. I understand. But if we're setting the bar as to whether or not things should be allowed together based on how their interaction might cause a problem, well, then we're going to have to prevent anyone who's on any sort of cold medications from traveling to any bars, because you mix those antihistamines with alcohol and it's far, far worse, right? See, to me, the question isn't about how much risk, so much as it about people's equal rights and the fact that we've recognized there is a risk and we're willing to live with that risk. So if we're willing to live with the risk of people driving their cars to bars and in consuming alcohol and then trusting them not to get behind the wheel, then we've already accepted that someone might violate our trust in getting behind the wheel too impaired. So what difference does it make if they violated our trust on one substance or on two? Do you follow? We've already come up with this idea as a society that we're going to trust you, adult, to go to the bar, consume a drug, monitor your own impairment on that drug, and on your own recognizance, decide whether or not you're going to drive. How does adding marijuana to that make that decision any different? Make that level of trust any different? It doesn't. It doesn't at all. If you were going to violate my trust and get behind the wheel drunk, then you're going to violate my trust and get behind the wheel high and drunk. It's not going to change whether or not you violate my trust. So are we saying that we can't have marijuana and alcohol at the same place because then the people will become less trustworthy? Or is it because we accept there will be a certain number of untrustworthy people and the risk they will present to us is that much greater? Because the latter is the argument being made by people who say they should be separate. Now, one of those people who has argued for the separation, and this is what Mason was referring to obliquely in our interview, was Keith Stropp, writing on the Normal board. Keith Stropp, my friend Keith Stropp from Normal, my mentor, writing on the Normal blog what a big mistake it was to drop the marijuana initiative in Denver, and how there shouldn't be marijuana where alcohol can be served. And that just really shocked me to hear that coming, or to read that coming from Keith. Knowing how many events we've done together where both alcohol and marijuana was served, you know, it just shocks me. And I wonder if, you know, sometimes I think maybe Keith may be worried about that backlash. I know I am. I'm worried about the potential for backlash too. But I think he was really off base in that editorial, criticizing Mason and Brian on their initiative. As Mason put it, you know, we had a situation where the city of Denver was wholeheartedly opposed to any sort of public use, and now through the threat of the initiative process are willing to sit down and discuss it in good faith. That's a win. That's succeeding in politics. And I don't want to be in a situation where marijuana consumers are treated separate but equal. And this stance of Keith's being against alcohol bars having marijuana kind of reminds me of some of the older activists in the LGBT movement circa 2005, 2006, who argued that pushing for gay marriage equality was, don't push so hard to gay marriage equality, let's just get civil unions first. And for some of the same reasoning, right? That maybe we shouldn't go so far. Maybe there'll be a backlash. It'll turn people off. Let's get something politically winnable. And I'm guilty of that incrementalism too, talking about various legalization initiatives that don't go as far as I'd like, but saying, hey, any move forward's a move forward. So if the question is, you've got no public access to use marijuana whatsoever, and the only alternative is marijuana only lounges, well then yeah, I'm going to take that. Just like if the only alternative in Oregon in 2006 was civil unions, I would have taken that too. But we need to understand that that's not the end point. Just like, you know, segregation and Jim Crow wasn't the end point of civil rights. It was a step that was taken, but it too was discriminatory.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
Yeah, maybe. But to me, separate but equal is never a good policy solution. I want to be able to hang out at the bars with the drinkers and the smokers, enjoying the live music, flirting with the pretty girls, whatever it else is that goes on at these places. I don't know because I never go. But No separate but equal for me. Thanks. It's 4:20. Enjoy yourselves. We'll be right back.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green. The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal. Ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes. The best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Electric Tuesday, featuring the latest in electronic dance music and other cutting-edge genres. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for our Electric Tuesday Daily Toker Tune. And joining us from Arizona, we've got Electric Bob on the line. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good. It's just hot.
I know. Is that the air conditioner right here in the background?
Yeah.
You know, we hit September here in Portland, and it shifts right into like 55 degrees and gray. Where are you at right now?
I think it's still 100 and still blue.
Oh my God. 100 degrees in September. That's harsh, man. I hope you're doing okay.
Yeah. But it'll get once October hits, it'll start getting into like 70.
That'll be very nice. I'll have to come visit then.
Yeah, well, there's a cannabis business expo pretty soon in Phoenix. Are you going to be there?
A what? We missed you for part of that. What was it?
Cannabis business expo. There's going to be one in Phoenix. I seen a big billboard offering.
Oh, do you know the date on it by any chance?
I can send you the details.
Yeah,
no problem.
Yeah, but I know there's some sort of Southwest expo, but I think that one's being held in L.A., so I don't think it's the same one.
Yeah, no, this one's being held at Phoenix Convention Center. I remember seeing the billboard and thought, oh, Russ will probably be.
We'll see. I get a lot of calls to go to these places, but it's a matter of them coughing up the plane ticket and the hotel room. So we'll see. We'll get this figured out. I'd love to head down there. Every time I go to Arizona in the late winter months, I always have a good time.
Exactly, yeah, and we can have dinner again.
Yeah, so tell us about, I know you've got your new record label, and you've probably got more of that coming up on Electric Bob's Boogaloo tonight at 8 o'clock, but what's the latest?
Just been putting more work in, getting more artists doing, and I might, I'm trying to organize a festival right now, like five stages. My buddy said he knows someone who has access to an abandoned airfield, so.
Wow. Hey, we'll put
trying to get that all in works.
We'll put on a 420 Radio Electric Bob Music Festival. I'll fly down for that. That'll be a lot of fun.
Hey, if you want to come to LA and you'll get we can invite everyone.
Yeah. All right. I like it. Keep me posted on that. So tell us about today's track that we've got for our 420 Electric Toker Tunes.
Lone? I forgot.
Was it Lone with Meeker Warmer Energy?
Yes. That's the one. This is a really down tempo, just one of those tracks that you just want to chill back and zone out to, basically. So if you have a joint, light it up right now.
All right. Light them up, folks. Or we've got music from.
Start getting torches.
Yeah, start the torch. Heat up the nail. We've got Lone with Meeker Warmer Energy. Is this one of your label's artists?
No. No, this is on a work disc and a bunch of other labels. He's pretty big and overseas in the UK.
All right.
I wish I had him on my label.
Let's check it out. This is Meeker Warmer Energy from Lone. Take it easy, Electric Bob. Try to stay cool.
I will.
420 Radio. Tune in, turn on, get highly educated.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone, and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
You're listening to 420 Radio. Listen Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific for Drug Policy Facts, podcasting at drugwarfacts.org. Hosted by the editor of Drug War Facts, this show is a wealth of information for seekers of truth in the drug policy debates. Check our online listings for Drug Policy Facts with Doug McVeigh from drugwarfacts.org.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome!
Welcome back, everybody. Music from Empire State Human. That song is called High. There's a amazing story on Al Jazeera America right now. Parents face child abuse investigations over pot use. As marijuana laws loosen, child welfare agencies are facing greater criticism for their policies surrounding the drug. I've just put it out on my Twitter feed, at Radical Russ, if you want to follow along with the article. But this is something we've covered many times on the show. We've had the family law, FLACA, FLCA, Family Law Cannabis Alliance, on the show before. Charmy Goulson has been on the show. And sadly, one of the activists who's been working in this area so hard, her name is Sarah. You know her on this network as Sarah Kant. She had a show. She had a Tuesday show. She had our Electric show before Electric Bob did. And Sarah has been working out in, Sarah Arnold's her real name. She went by Sarah Kant for a long time. But she's been working out there in the Northeast, fighting for parental rights and fighting this prohibition. And we've gotten word over the past few weeks that her baby daughter has been diagnosed with an inoperable glioma, a severe tumor, brain cancer. And doesn't face a very good prognosis for long life. And it just, to me, is one of the most cruelly tragic things to happen to one of our own in this activism community. You know, someone who's fought so hard for other people's kids, fought for other parents, and in some cases fighting for them to be able to have the right to use medical cannabis either for themselves or for their child, to have her own child afflicted with this, it's just sad. And I don't know what sort of treatment. We of course know that cannabis oil has long been recommended for the treatment of cancers, gliomas in particular. There's some science that shows THC is effective against those kind of brain cancers. I don't know if she's going that route. If she's tried that, we'll reach out to her and see if we can get her to talk about it sometime. But so many of these parents are facing family courts and child protective services that have grown far beyond what they were intended to do, that have become instruments of fundraising for the state and tools of terrorism against parents who use cannabis. The amount of power that the law gives the workers of child protective services is amazing. It's astonishing and far beyond sometimes what police are even allowed to do. All for the supposed benefit of the child. And there's certainly numerous cases we can point to where kids have been neglected and beaten and sexually traumatized and psychologically harmed, where we can show that, yeah, it's a good thing we have these laws to protect these kids. But these laws have been abused to go after people who use marijuana, even in the states where marijuana is legal for medical or recreational purposes, because we have a family law and court system still entrenched in the mindset of 1986 war on drugs mentality that haven't adjusted to the times now, that haven't recognized the truths about cannabis and how people that use cannabis aren't demons or zombies or terrible people who can't raise kids. And the story in Al Jazeera America talks about Shawnee Anderson. She's in Napa, California. So we're talking a medical marijuana state and one that's poised to legalize in 2016. Napa, California, with her 11-month-old son. 20 minutes before, cops had come to her house because she and her boyfriend, Aaron Hillier, got in a loud argument. They were low on sleep and stressed about his first day back at work. A disagreement over changing the diaper escalated. It was a ridiculous argument. She told him, no, the fight had not become physical. It wasn't a domestic violence situation. They were just stressed out and angry at each other and yelling. But the cops put her in handcuffs, arrested both her and Aaron, the boyfriend and the mother, arrested and charged with felony child endangerment because the cops found prescription marijuana packets. And when they say prescription, they mean recommendation. They mean they found marijuana that had been packaged and sold from a dispensary because nobody has a prescription. But they found marijuana packets, pipes, and burnt joints on the tables in the living room and the couple's bedroom. Now, the couple explained that they're licensed California medical marijuana users. They have their medical marijuana recommendations. But the cops said the couple put their son at risk by careless use of the substance at home. In a video of the incident, one officer says, "Your baby doesn't need to be subjected to marijuana." For that, they spent 5 days in jail. The kids spent 2 weeks in foster care. And for the next 13 months, the couple had to fight the juvenile court, which ruled that they'd mistreated their son. They got him back after the 2 weeks in foster care, but the government had official jurisdiction over the kid and was entitled to make any decision it deemed in the interest of the child, including removing him from his parents' care, according to the Al Jazeera story. The Family Law and Cannabis Alliance that I mentioned earlier, formed in 2013 by Sarah, was formed to help parents in marijuana-related child welfare and custody disputes, says it assisted 200 families nationwide last year. Public defenders in Colorado and New York say as many as 1/6 of their cases involve marijuana, although use of the drug is usually one of just several allegations against the parents. There can be requirements of regular drug testing, findings of neglect, placement in foster care, termination of parental rights, even. And of course, these are happening more often to poor families and more often to people of color, of course. They tend to live in the more heavily policed neighborhoods. And don't forget about the other angle on this when
mothers go to give birth in hospitals, sometimes these hospitals will drug test the newborns. And the mother, having just gone through labor, will be met by a cop in her room to explain to her how she's facing charges for subjecting her infant to drugs. Of course, that happens more often in the poor hospitals, the inner city hospitals, than it does in some suburban hospital to a white lady. Now, the child protection agencies say the marijuana use alone would not qualify for child abuse and neglect, but pot use can impair a person's ability to parent and pose safety risks to a child. I have trouble believing that, Mr. Michael Weston, the spokesperson for California Department of Social Services, because I don't see that happening to parents who have a case of beer in their fridge. I don't see that happening to parents who have bottles of wine in their home. And even if we did find that these parents were people who might have been drinking to excess, that mere fact alone is not enough for the state to be taking the kids away, and neither should some parents' use of marijuana. See, we in this society are going to have to unravel a very long, tangled, complicated relationship with drugs. And one of the things that we have to unravel is this idea. It's the Jekyll and Hyde of drugs, right? It's this idea that you're Dr. Jekyll, and then you take a drug and you become Mr. Hyde. At one point, you're a perfectly capable and able worker or parent or citizen. But then you take the drug and now you're no longer any of those things. You're a terrible parent. You're a terrible citizen because the drug has taken you over and you are a slave to the drug's effects. Now, you can make that point with someone who is chronically addicted to heroin or strung out on meth or a raging alcoholic. You can make that point pretty clearly. It is difficult to make that point with someone who is a marijuana consumer. In fact, it would be easier to make the contra argument that the use of marijuana has actually improved the parenting skills of a number of these parents who are using it. Articles I see popping up all over in mainstream magazines, "I smoke pot and I'm a better parent," talking about how smoking pot allows the stressed out mom to get back to that childlike level of wonder. And Guy O'Bealum has a whole comedy routine on pot making him a better parent because he'll take his kids to see any animated feature ever made. The panda knows kung fu. Shit, let's get in the car. Let's go. So this is something that as we continue to legalize throughout this country, we have to recognize that that just opens the door to a very, very messy house that needs a lot of cleaning. It opens the door to us dealing with all of these family law issues that get complicated by marijuana. It opens the door to all these employment law issues that are complicated by marijuana. It opens the door to the entire paradigm that says, if we can detect that you're a drug user, we therefore can do things to you. We therefore can restrict your rights. We therefore can decide all sorts of things about your character based on the content of your urine. Something I don't think Martin Luther King was thinking about when he had his "I Have a Dream" speech. Someday, my little children will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the metabolite count in their urine. Doesn't quite ring true, does it? It's equal rights that we're fighting for, and we won't stop until we got them.
America's RR7 secret agent of progressive change.
The name's Belville, Russ Belville.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
Quick follow-up. Under California law, government has to prove harm to the child in order to claim custody. But in New York, Proof of harm is not necessary. In Colorado, even where it's legal, positive test for marijuana in a newborn automatically triggers a child welfare investigation. A mother's constitutional right to smoke pot in Colorado will automatically trigger an investigation into her child's welfare. We've got a long way to go, folks.
Four20 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
It's time for cannabis facts about teen drug use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
Welcome back, everybody. Music from Dubots. That's Get the Feeling from Tesseract Recordings. It's Electric Tuesday, 8 o'clock tonight. Electric Bob's Boogaloo brings you an hour of great house, trance, dub, all sorts of interesting electronic music. Coming up tonight, 8 p.m. and on the weekends as part of our six-hour music jam. It starts at 8 o'clock p.m. with the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, Great Metal and Rock. At 10 o'clock, Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, Blues Soul Funk from the late 70s, early 80s. Then you'll get Electric Bob's Boogaloo at 11 o'clock with the house, dance, trance type music. Midnight, you get Gordon Green's Music Planet bringing you world music. And at 1 a.m., the New Viper Hour, the best from our library of early 20th century blues, jazz, and swing, and the beginnings of American cannabis culture. Following up on this story that's in Al Jazeera America, again, the use of child protective services against cannabis-using parents. And they point out, the researchers who study this stuff, Dr. Carl Hart from Columbia University, Carleton University's Dr. Peter Fried, have all pointed out and testified in Colorado, there was a couple of bills that Colorado tried to pass to specifically define what a drug-endangered child was. A lot of these states have a statute about a drug-endangered child. A lot of this is like, you know, if they find a kid, the parents are cooking meth and they got a meth lab. Well, the kid's drug-endangered, right? There's all these caustic chemicals and toxic fumes and all that, right? So yeah, drug-endangered child. If the parents were, you know, big cocaine users and they were leaving piles of powder all around the house where the kid could snort up some cocaine, yeah, drug-endangered child, that kid could be killed, right? But they use these drug endangered child statutes to go over parents that are growing pot plants. And they try to use this lousy justification. Well, there's a lot of electricity there. At 220 volt electricity, and that could harm the kid. Well, then parents can't have a dryer. I mean, dryers run on 220. Next, these pot plants, they use a lot of nutrients and chemicals and fertilizers that the kid could get into. Well, okay, then we got to stop mom from planting the tomato garden where she uses Eagle 20 on it or something. We gotta stop anything, the cleaning products under the sink, for God's sake, the kid could get into. And the science shows there's, how pregnant women using pot might affect the fetus. It's very inconclusive. There's been studies showing that the kids of Jamaican women do just fine. That was a study from Melanie Dreyer back in the 70s. There's other studies that say there's less, lower birth weight for the kids that are born from pot smoking moms. It's kind of, we don't have a lot of good research because it's a Schedule I drug. But we do know that it is far less harmful to a fetus to be exposed to marijuana smoke in the womb than to be exposed to tobacco smoke or alcohol use. And we do not immediately drug test women who have given birth to detect whether or not there's nicotine metabolites in their system or alcohol in their system. And we don't send caseworkers to their home where if they find a case of Luckies or a carton of Luckies up on the cabinet and a case of Carlton's in the fridge. Luckies and Carlton's, where am I? Like Milwaukee, 1970? Anyway, seven Carlings and a double rock and rye. But anyway, they don't automatically take that mom and consider her to be drug endangering her kids because she smokes cigarettes and drinks alcohol. So we got a long, long way to go in treating marijuana like alcohol. Wasn't that the tagline? Treat marijuana like alcohol. All right, well, whose kids are you taking away when you find that the couple drinks beer? Not raging alcoholics, not getting into DUIs and all that kind of stuff. They're just beer drinkers. How many of the kids are getting taken away? None. Now, speaking of the kids, there's still more controversy over Buddy, the marijuana mascot. Which, again, my big problem with Buddy, the marijuana mascot, is a bud is female. This character has a bud for its head on a male body. Female, it'd be like putting Marilyn Monroe's head on Arnold Schwarzenegger's body, right? Like, okay, but so Buddy, the mascot, he's out there with the Responsible Ohio people, issue 3, that's put together this big, vinyled up, looks like an F-450 van, and taking it around to college campuses in Ohio, trying to get young people, college age, to register to vote for this issue 3. So, sorry there, had to sneeze. So Responsible Ohio's getting a lot of criticism for this from... Hell, even from Normal criticized this. Tom Angel from Marijuana Majority criticized this. And the children's health advocates have criticized it as well, saying he's reminiscent of Joe Camel. The Joe Camel that was marketing cigarettes to the kids back in the 1990s. They say the pot mascot makes light of a dangerous illegal drug in a manner that's appealing to kids. It's nothing less than a ploy to market to children, said Nick Lashutka, the president of Ohio Children's Hospitals Association. Now, the executive director of Responsible Ohio, Ian James, says it's nothing like Joe Camel because he's not marketing marijuana, but rather registering voters. And that the mascot only addresses people that are 18 and older and works specifically with voters. Buddy has no connection with anybody under 18 because anybody under 18 can't vote. Yeah, the problem, Ian, is that the tobacco companies could have made the same argument that Joe Camel wasn't for the kids because kids aren't legally allowed to smoke tobacco.
So it's kind of a sad, sad little response to the controversy here. And I think the distinction of the fact that the bud-headed mascot is campaigning for votes, is, you know, to register voters, is also a little bit of, you know, it's the same kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge shenanigans as when the head shop owner says the bongs are for tobacco use only. It's the same sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge the dispensaries did when, oh, this isn't, you're not buying marijuana, it's merely a donation. It's the same wink and nudge game that's going on here in Portland with the smoke buddy cart, where the guy says, no, no, I'm not selling pot. I'm giving pot away, but I'm selling these jars. It's just bullshit is what it is. It's just bullshit. Now, High in Hawaii makes the point that adults like cartoons too. And this is the point I make too, right? Is that, look, Avengers, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, that's not just kids going to see those movies, okay? They wouldn't make enough money if only kids were seeing the movies. Just the same way the gummy bear company, Haribo or whoever you get your gummy bears from, they wouldn't stay in business if only kids ate candy, right? So there's bullshit on the other side too. It's just not as stinky, okay? Because the other side does have the point of Joe Camel and does have the point of every breakfast cereal ever being marketed with cartoons, and, you know, things that are marketed toward kids are marketed in a cartoon way. They can make that point. And they could also make the point that if the excuse is really that you're trying to register voters, why do you need a bud-headed mascot to get attention and to register voters? There's all sorts of ways to get attention and register voters that would appeal to adults, but not necessarily kids. You know, Abercrombie and Fitch with their shirtless male models. Get one of them Abercrombie and Fitch boys and get some bikini model girl. You're going to appeal to a lot of adults and register a lot of votes. Of course, you'll get criticized for the sexism of it, but at least you wouldn't be criticized for marketing to the kids. So yeah, it's this Responsible Ohio campaign. As I said in one of my posts, I can't ever be against marijuana legalization, but I can be less than devastated if one of them fails. It's like, you know, I want legalization to happen in Ohio. I don't want to give Kevin Sabet a moral or actual victory in 2015. I don't want the campaigns in 2016 having the looming specter of a loss in 2015 hanging over them. I don't want the Midwestern and industrial Rust Belt states being put off until 2020 or later, because that's how long it's going to be before they get another shot. Don't believe these people saying, oh no, we'll be back with something in 2016. Yeah, sure you will. Show me the money. Well, folks, time flies when you legalize. That's all the time I got for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Radical Russ from beautiful, legal Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you